wings and fur and teeth came charging. Hands on his hips, Zed waited. Just before it was on him, he held up a hand, bringing the short-tailed guard to a lurching halt. It was half again as tall as he, full-grown and twice as fierce as a long-tailed gar. The beast growled and blinked, its great muscles flexing as it fought against the force that kept it from reaching out and grabbing the old man. It was furious that it had not yet killed him. Zed reached up and with a crooked finger beckoned it to lean closer. The gar, panting in rage, bent toward him. Zed jammed his finger hard under its chin.
"What is your name?"
he hissed. The beast grunted twice and made a sound from deep in its throat. Zed gave a nod.
"I will remember it. Tell me, do you wish to live or to die?"
The gar struggled to back away, but was unable to.
"Good. Then you will do exactly as I say. Somewhere between here and Dahara, a quad comes this way. Hunt them and kill them. When you have done so, go back to Dahara, to where you came from. Do these things, and I will let you live. But I will remember your name, and if you fail to kill the quad, or ever come back after your task is done, I will kill you and feed you to your flies. Do you agree to my terms?"
The gar grunted an acknowledgement.
"Good. Then be gone."
Zed removed his finger from under the gar's chin. Scrambling to get away, the beast flapped its wings frantically, beating down the grass as it stumbled along. At last, the gar was airborne. Zed watched it as it circled, searching for the quad. As the hunt moved steadily east, the circle seemed to get smaller until the old man could no longer see the beast. Only then did he continue on to the top of a hill. Standing next to his cloud rock, Zed pointed down at it and began turning his bony finger in a circle as if stirring a stew. The massive rock grated against the ground as it tried to revolve with the movement of Zed's finger. The rock shuddered, trying to rotate its own weight. Popping and snapping, it fractured, sending hairline cracks shooting across its surface. Its trembling bulk struggled against the force being applied. The granular structure of the stone began to soften. Unable to maintain its state any longer, the texture of the rock liquefied enough to allow its mass to rotate with the movement of the finger above it. Gradually, the speed of Zed's stirring increased until light erupted from the rotating liquid rock. The light built in intensity with the speed of Zed's hand. As colors and sparkles of light spun, shadows and forms came into the center of the light and vanished as the fog of brightness increased. Light threatened to ignite the air about him. A dull roar, like the sound of wind rushing through a fissure, came forth. The smells of autumn changed to winter clarity, then spring's new plowed ground, summer's flowers, and back to autumn again. Clean, pure illumination chased the colors and sparkles away. The rock abruptly solidified, and Zed stepped atop it, into the light. The brightness faded to a faint glow that swirled like smoke. Before him stood two apparitions, mere shadows of form. Where sharpness should have been, their shapes softened like a dim memory, yet they were still recognizable, and the sight of them brought a quickness to Zed's heart. His mother's voice came hollow and distant.
"What troubles you, son? Why have you called us after so many years?"
Her arms stretched out to him. Zed's arms reached out, but could not touch her.
"I am troubled by what the mother confessor tells me."
"She speaks the truth."
He closed his eyes and nodded as his arms lowered with hers.
"It's true, then? All my students, save Gilla, are dead?"
"You are the only one left to protect the mother confessor."
She drifted closer.
"You must appoint the seeker."
"The High Council sowed these seeds," he protested, frowning. "Now you want me to help? They turned my advice away. Let them live and die by their own greed."
Zed's father floated closer.
"My son, why were you angry with your students?"
Zed scowled.
because they put themselves before their duty to help their people.
I see. And how is this different from what you do now?
The echo of his voice hung in the air. Zed's fists tightened.
My help was offered, but turned away.
And when has it not been so that there would be those who were blind or foolish or greedy? Would you let them have their way over you so easily? Would you let them so simply prevent you from helping those who would be helped? Your abandonment of the people may have a reason that seems just to you, unlike the actions of your students, but the results are the same. In the end, they saw their mistake and did the right things, the things you taught them. Learn from your students, son.
Zedekus?
His mother said.
Would you let Richard die too, and all the other innocents? Appoint the seeker.
He's too young.
She shook her head with a gentle smile.
He will not get the chance to grow older.
He has not passed my final test.
Darkin Rahl hunts Richard. The cloud that shadows him was sent by Rahl to track him. The snake vine was put in the jar by Darkin Rahl in the expectation that Richard would search for it, and it would bite him. The snake vine wasn't meant to kill. Rahl sought to have him put to sleep by the fever until he could come for him.
Her form drifted closer, her voice becoming more loving.
You know in your heart you have been watching him, hoping he would show himself to be the one.
To what avail?
Zed closed his eyes, his chin sinking to his chest.
Darkin Rahl has the 3 boxes of Ordin.
No,
his father said.
He has only 2. He still seeks the 3rd.
Zed's eyes snapped open, his head jerked up.
What? He doesn't have them all?
No,
his mother said.
But he soon will.
And the book? Surely he must have the Book of Counted Shadows?
No, he searches for it.
Zed put a finger to his chin, thinking.
Then there's a chance,
he whispered.
What sort of fool would put the boxes of Ordin in play before he had all 3, and the book?
His mother's features sharpened into a look of ice.
A very dangerous one. He travels the underworld.
Zed stiffened, and his breath caught in his throat. His mother's eyes seemed to pierce him.
That is how he was able to cross the boundary and recover the 1st box, by traveling the underworld. That is how he was able to begin the undoing of the boundary, from within the underworld. He commands some in it, more with his every coming. If you choose to help, be warned. Do not go through the boundary or send the seeker through. Rahl expects it. If you enter, he will have you. The mother confessor came through only because he did not expect it. He will not make the same mistake again.
But then, how am I to get us to the Midlands? I can't help if I can't get to the Midlands.
Zed's voice was tense with frustration.
We're sorry, but we don't know. We believe there must be a way, but it is not known to us. That is why you must appoint the seeker. If he is the right one, he will find a way.
Their forms began to shimmer, to fade.
Wait! I must have the answers to my questions. Please, don't leave me!
We're sorry. It is not our choice. We are called back behind the veil.
Why is Rahl after Richard? Please, help me!
His father's voice was weak and distant.
We don't know. You must search for the answers yourself. We have trained you well. You are more talented than we ever were.
Use what you were taught and what you feel. We love you, son. Until this is settled, one way or the other, we cannot come to you again. With Orden in play, coming again could tear the veil.
His mother kissed her hand and held it out to him as he did the same in return, and then they were gone. Zedekus Zul Zorander, the great and honorable wizard, stood alone on the wizard's rock his father had given him and stared out into the night, thinking wizard's thoughts.
"Nothing is ever easy," he whispered.
Chapter 8. Richard came awake with a start. Warm midday light filled the room, and the wonderful tangy aroma of spice soup filled his lungs. He was in his room at Zed's house. He looked up at the familiar knots in the wood walls, and the faces he always made them into in his mind stared back. The door to the front room stood shut. A chair waited next to the bed, empty. He sat up, pushing the covers down, and saw that he still wore his dirty clothes. He felt for the tooth under his shirt and sighed in relief when he found it still there, safe. A short stick held the window open a few inches, letting in fresh air and the sound of Kalin's laughter. Zed must be telling stories, he thought. Richard looked at his left hand. It was wrapped, but no longer sore when he flexed his fingers. His head didn't hurt any more either. In fact, he felt wonderful. Hungry, but wonderful. He amended that to dirty, in filthy clothes, and hungry, but wonderful. A tub of bathwater, soap, and clean towels sat in the center of the small room. A clean outfit of his forest garb was folded and stacked neatly on the chair. The bathwater looked deliciously inviting. He dipped his hand in and found the water warm. Zed must have known when he would wake. Knowing Zed as well as he did, that didn't surprise him. Richard undressed and slipped into the welcoming water. The soap smelled almost as good to him as the soup. He liked to stay in the tub for a good long soak, but he felt too wide awake for soaking and was eager to be outside with the other two. Unwrapping the hand, he was surprised to find how much it had healed overnight. When he came out, Kalin and Zed were sitting at the table waiting for him. Kalin's dress was freshly washed, he noticed, and she looked bathed, too. Her hair was clean and glistened in the sunlight. Green eyes sparkled up at him. A big bowl of soup waited for him next to her at the table, along with cheese and fresh bread. "I wouldn't have expected to have slept until noon," he said, swinging his leg over the bench. They both laughed. Richard eyed them suspiciously. Kalin straightened her face. "This is the second noon you have slept to, Richard."
"Yes," Zed added. "You slept right through the first." "How do you feel? How is your hand?"
"I'm fine. Thank you, Zed, for helping me. Thank you both."
He opened and closed his fingers to show them the improvement.
"The hand feels much better, except it itches."
"My mother always said that if it itched, that meant it was getting better."
Richard grinned at her.
"Mine too."
He fished a piece of potato and a mushroom into his spoon and tasted it.
"It's as good as mine," he said to her, earnestly.
She sat crosswise on the bench, facing toward him, her elbow resting on the table with the side of her jaw nestled in the heel of her hand. She gave him a knowing smile.
"Zed tells it differently."
Richard cast a reproachful eye at Zed, who looked up at the sky in an exaggerated manner.
"Does he now? I will have to remind him of that the next time he's begging me to make it for him."
"Frankly," she said in a low voice, but not low enough that Zed couldn't hear, "from what I've seen, I think he would eat dirt if someone else dished it up for him."
Richard laughed.
"I see you've gotten to know him well."
"I tell you, Richard,"
the old man said, pointing a bony finger, not about to let them get the best of him.
"She could make dirt taste good. You would do well to take lessons from her."
Richard broke off a piece of bread and dunked it in the soup.
He knew the joking was a release for the tension he sensed, a way to pass the time while they both waited for him to finish. Kaylin had given Richard her word that she would wait for him to ask Zed's help. It was apparent that she had kept her word. And Zed's way was to play ignorant and innocent and wait for you to ask something first so he could better judge what you already knew. This day, Richard could not allow any of his games. This day, things were different.
"That is one thing I don't trust about her, though."
Zed's tone was dark, menacing. Richard froze in mid-chew. He swallowed and waited, not daring to look at either of them while the other paused.
"She doesn't like cheese. I don't think I could ever trust anyone who doesn't like cheese. It's not natural."
Richard relaxed. Zed was just twiddling with his mind, as he always called it. His old friend seemed to have a knack for catching him off guard, and he delighted in it. Richard stole a glance at Zed to see him sitting there with an innocent smile on his face. Richard smiled, too, in spite of himself. While he relished the bowl of soup, Zed nibbled on a piece of cheese to make his point. Kaylin nibbled on a piece of bread to make hers. The bread tasted delicious. Kaylin was pleased when he pointed it out. As Richard neared the end of his meal, he decided it was time to change the tone of things back to business. "The next quad. Has there been any sign?"
"No.
I was worried, but Zed did a cloud reading for me and said it appeared they must have run into trouble of some kind since they were nowhere to be found." He gave Zed a sideways glance. "Is that true?"
"True as toasted toad."
Zed had used the expression since Richard was young, to win him over with humor and let him know he could always trust the old man to be truthful with him above all else. Richard wondered what sort of trouble a quad could run into. For better or worse, he had succeeded in changing the mood at the table. He felt Kaylin's impatience for him to get on with it, and he sensed impatience in Zed, too. Kaylin turned back to the table and put both hands in her lap, waiting. Richard feared that if he didn't handle things properly, she would do whatever it was she was here to do, and he would have no control over it. Richard finished his meal and pushed the bowl away with his thumbs, at the same time meeting Zed's eyes. His friend's humor was gone, but otherwise he showed nothing of what he was thinking. He simply waited. It was Richard's turn now, and once he began, there could be no going back. "Zed, my friend, we need your help to stop Darken Rahl."
"I know. You want me to find the wizard for you."
"No, that won't be necessary. I have already found him." Richard felt Kaylin's questioning eyes on him, but he continued to fix his gaze on Zed. "You are the great wizard." Kaylin began to rise from the bench. Without taking his eyes from Zed, Richard reached under the table and clutched her forearm, forcing her to sit back down. Still, Zed showed no emotion. His voice came even and soft.
"And what makes you think this, Richard?"
Richard took a deep breath, letting it out slowly as he put his hands on the table, intertwining his fingers. He watched his hands as he spoke. "When Kaylin first told me about the history of the Three Lands, she said the Council had taken actions that made the death of the wizard's wife and daughter at the hands of a quad stand for nothing, and as punishment, the wizard did the worst thing possible to them. He left them to suffer the consequences of their own actions. That sounded like the very thing you would do, but I couldn't be sure then. I had to find a way to know. When you first saw Kaylin and were angry that she had come here from the Midlands, I told you she had been attacked by a quad. I watched your eyes. They told me I was right. Only someone who had suffered a loss like yours would have had that look in his eyes. And you changed your attitude toward her after I told you, completely. Only someone who had known the terror personally would have that kind of empathy. But still, I didn't trust my instinct. I waited." He looked up at Zed and held the other's gaze while he spoke. "Your biggest mistake was when you told Kaylin she was safe here. You would not lie, especially about something like that. And you know what a quad is. How could an old man make it safe here, against a quad, without magic? He couldn't. But one old wizard could. The next quad is nowhere to be found. You said so yourself. They ran into some trouble. I think they ran into some wizard trouble. You were as good as your word. You always are.
Richard's voice turned gentler.
I have always known, in a thousand little ways, that you were more than you claimed to be, that you were a special person. I have always been honored to have you as my friend, and I know that as my friend, you would do anything, anything you must, to help me if my life were in danger, just as I would do anything for you. I trust you with my life, and it is now in your hands.
Richard hated closing the trap in this fashion, but all their lives were at risk. There could be no games. Zed put his hands on the table and leaned forward.
I have never before been this proud of you, Richard.
His eyes told that he meant it.
You got it all right.
He stood and came around the table. When Richard stood, they hugged.
I have also never been this sad for you.
Zed held Richard in a tight embrace for a moment longer.
Sit. I will be right back. I have something for you. Both of you sit and wait a moment.
Zed cleared the table, then, holding the plates in the crook of his arm, he strode to the house. Caitlin looked worried as she watched him go. Richard had thought that she would be happy to have found the wizard, but now she looked more frightened than anything else. Things were going differently from what he had expected. When Zed reappeared, he was carrying something long. Caitlin came to her feet. Richard realized Zed's fist clutched the scabbard of a sword. Caitlin put herself in front of him before he reached the table, grabbing fistfuls of his robes.
Don't do this, Zed.
Her voice was desperate.
It is not my choice.
Zed, please, no. Choose someone else, not Richard.
Zed cut her off.
Caitlin, I warned you about this. I told you, he picks himself. If I choose someone other than the true one, we all die. If you have a better way, put words to it.
He swept her aside, came to the side of the table opposite Richard, and slammed the sword down in front of him. Richard jumped. He looked from the sword up into Zed's fierce eyes as the other leaned over the table.
This belongs to you,
the wizard said. Caitlin turned her back to them. Richard's gaze fell upon the sword. The silver scabbard gleamed with gold flourishes that embellished it in sweeps and waves. Steel crossguards swept out and down aggressively. Finely twisted silver wire covered the grip, and interwoven along the side of the braided silver, gold wire formed the word truth. This, Richard thought, was the sword of a king. It was the finest weapon he had ever seen. Slowly, he rose to his feet. Zed picked up the scabbard by the point and held the hilt of the sword to Richard.
Draw it.
As if in a trance, Richard closed his fingers around the hilt and pulled the sword free, the blade making a ringing metallic sound that hung in the air. Richard had never heard a sword make a sound quite like it. His hand closed tightly around the grip, and in his palm and on his fingers opposite, he could feel the bumps of the gold wire that spelled out the word truth on each side of the hilt, pressing almost painfully into his flesh. Inexplicably, it felt precisely correct. The weight fit him exactly. He felt as if a part of him was now complete. From deep within, he felt his anger stir, brought to life, searching direction. He was suddenly aware of the tooth against his chest. As his rage rose, he felt an awakening power rushing into him from the sword, the twin to his own anger. His own feelings had always seemed independent, whole. This was like having an image in a mirror come to life. It was a terrifying specter.
His anger fed on the force from the sword, and in return, the wrath from the sword fed on his anger. Together, the twin storms spiraled through him. He felt like a helpless bystander being dragged along. It was a frightening and at the same time seductive sensation that bordered on violation. Fearful perceptions of his own anger twisted with tantalizing promise. The bewitching emotions rushed headlong through him, seizing his anger, soaring with it. Richard struggled to control the rage. He was on the brink of panic, on the brink of abandon. Zedekus Zul Zorander threw his head back and spread his arms. To the sky he called out,
"Fair warning to those living and those dead! The Seeker is named!"
Thunder from the blue sky shook the ground and rolled off toward the boundary. Kaelin fell to her knees in front of Richard, head bowed, hands held behind her back.
"I pledge my life in the defense of the Seeker."
Zed knelt beside her, his head bowed.
"I pledge my life in the defense of the Seeker."
Richard stood gripping the Sword of Truth in his hand, eyes wide in breathless bewilderment.
"Zed," he whispered, "what in the name of everything good is a Seeker?"
Chapter 9. With the aid of a hand to his knee, Zed rose to his feet, rearranged his robes around his bony body, and held his hand out to Kaelin, who was staring at the ground. Noticing the hand, she took it, coming to her feet as well. Her face bore a distressed expression. Zed considered her for a moment, and she nodded that she was all right. Zed turned to Richard.
"What is a Seeker? A wise first question in your new capacity, but not one swiftly answered."
Richard gazed down at the gleaming sword in his hand, not at all sure he wanted anything to do with it. He slid it back into its scabbard, glad to be free of the feelings it invoked, and held it in both hands before him.
"Zed, I've never seen this before. Where have you kept it?"
Zed smiled proudly.
"In the cabinet, in the house."
Richard eyed him skeptically.
"There's nothing in the cabinet but dishes and pans and your powders."
"Not that cabinet," he said,
lowering his voice as if to thwart anyone who might be listening.
"In my wizard's cabinet."
Richard straightened with a frown.
"I've never seen any other cabinet."
"Bags, Richard! You're not supposed to see it. It's a wizard's cabinet. It's invisible."
Richard felt more than a little stupid. "And how long have you had this?"
"Oh, I don't know. Maybe a dozen years or so."
Zed swept his slender hand in the air as if trying to brush the question away. "And how did you come to have it?" Zed's tone hardened.
"The naming of the Seeker is a wizard's task. The High Council wrongly took it upon itself to name the person. They didn't care anything about finding the right person. They gave the post to whoever suited them at the time, or whoever offered the most. The sword belongs to the Seeker as long as he is alive, or as long as he chooses to be Seeker. In between, while a new Seeker is sought, the Sword of Truth belongs to the wizards, or more precisely, it belongs to me, as naming Seekers is my responsibility. The last fellow who had it became..."
His eyes turned up as if searching the sky for the right word.
"Entangled with a witch woman. So, while he was distracted, I went into the Midlands and retrieved what is mine. Now, it is yours."
Richard felt himself being drawn into something not of his own choosing. He looked to Kaelin. She seemed to have shed her anguish and was unreadable again. "This is what you came here for? This is what you wanted the wizard to do?"
"Richard, I wanted the wizard to name a Seeker. I did not know it would be you."
He was beginning to feel trapped as he looked from one to the other.
"You two think I can somehow save us? That's what you both are thinking, that somehow I'm to stop Dark and Rawl? A wizard can't do it, but I'm to try?"
Terror rose with his heart into his throat. Zed came and put a reassuring arm around his shoulder.
"Richard, look up in the sky. Tell me what you see."
Richard looked and saw the snake-like cloud. He didn't need to answer the question. Zed pressed his strong, bony fingers into Richard's flesh.
Come, sit, and I will tell you what you need to know. Then you decide for yourself what it is you will do. Come.
He put his other arm around Kalin's shoulder and guided them both to the bench at the table. He went to his place opposite them and sat. Richard laid the sword on the table between them to signify that the matter was yet to be decided. Zed pushed his sleeves up his arms a little.
There is a magic, he began. An ancient and dangerous magic of immense power. It's a magic spawned from the earth, from life itself. It is held in three vessels called the Three Boxes of Auden. The magic is dormant until the boxes are put into play, as it is called. To do so is not easy. It requires a person who has knowledge gained from long scholarship and who can call upon considerable power of his own. Once a person has at least one of the boxes, the magic of Auden can be put in play. He then has 1 year from that time to open a box, but he must have all three before any will open. They work together. You can't simply have one and open it. If the person who puts them in play fails to acquire all three and to open one within the allotted time, he forfeits his life to the magic. There is no going back. Darkenrall must open one of the boxes or die. On the first day of winter, his year is up.
Zed's face was tight with hard wrinkles and determination. He leaned forward a little.
Each box holds a different power, which is released upon its opening. If Rall opens the correct one, he gains the magic of Auden, the magic of life itself, power over all things living and dead. He will have unchallenged power and authority. He will be a master with immutable dominion over all people. Anyone he doesn't like, he will be able to kill with a thought, in any manner of his choosing, wherever that person is, no matter how far away.
Sounds like a terribly evil magic, Richard said. Zed leaned back, taking his hands from the table. He shook his head.
No, not really. The magic of Auden is the power of life. Like all power, it simply exists. It's the user who determines what use it will be put to. The magic of Auden can just as easily be used to help crops grow, to heal the sick, to end conflict. It's all in what the user wants. The power is neither evil nor good. It simply exists. It is up to the mind of man to put it to use. I think we all know which use Darkenrall would choose.
Zed paused, as was his way, to let Richard ponder the meaning of what he had been told. His thin face fixed in resolve as he waited. Kalin, too, had a look that told him she was determined to have him fully understand the ominous nature of what Zed was saying. Richard, of course, didn't need to ponder it, since he knew it all from the Book of Counted Shadows. The book was explicit. From the book, he knew Zed was barely touching on the full extent of the cataclysm that would sweep the land if Darkenrall opened the correct box. He knew also what would happen if one of the other boxes was opened, but he couldn't reveal his foreknowledge, and so had to ask anyway. And if he opens one of the others? Zed came forward against the table in a blink. He had expected that this would be the next question.
Open the wrong box and the magic claims him. He's dead,
Zed snapped his fingers.
Just like that. We are all safe. The threat is removed.
He leaned closer, his brow furrowed, and gave Richard a hard look.
Open the other wrong box, and every bug, every blade of grass, every tree, every man, woman, and child, every living thing is incinerated into nothingness. It would be the end of all life. The magic of Auden is twin to the magic of life itself, and death is part of everything that lives. So the magic of Auden is tied to death as well as life.
Zed sat back, seeming to be overwhelmed by the telling of the choices of catastrophe. Though Richard already knew it all, he still swallowed hard at hearing it out loud. Somehow it seemed more real to him like this, more real when there was a name put to it. When he had learned the book, it was all so abstract, so hypothetical, that he had never given any thought to the possibility that it would come to pass. His only concern had been that the knowledge be preserved so as to be returned to its keeper. He wished he could tell Zed what he knew, but his oath to his father prevented him from saying anything. It also required him to keep up the pretense by asking another question to which he already knew the answer. How will Rawl know which box to open? Zed rearranged the sleeves of his robes and looked down at the table, watching his hands as he spoke.
Putting the boxes in play imparts to the person certain privileged information. It must be that this information tells him how he can discover which box is which.
That made sense. No one knew of the book but its keeper and, it appeared, the person who put the boxes in play. The book made no reference to this, but it seemed logical. A sudden jolt went through him. Dark and Rawl must be after him for the book. He almost didn't hear Zed beginning to speak again.
Rawl has done something out of the ordinary, though. He has put the boxes in play before he has all three.
Richard came to attention immediately.
He must be stupid, or very confident.
Confident, the wizard said. When I left the Midlands, it was for two main reasons. The first was because the High Council took the naming of the Seeker upon itself. The second was because they mishandled the Boxes of Ordon. People had come to believe that the power of the Boxes was just a legend. They thought me an old fool for telling them it was no legend but the truth. They refused to heed my warnings.
He pounded his fist down on the table, causing Caelan to jump.
They laughed at me!
His face was red with anger, making it stand out all the more against the mass of his white hair.
I wanted the boxes kept far apart from each other, and with magic, hidden and locked away so as to never be found again. The council, instead, wanted them given to important people like trophies to be shown off. They used them as payments for favors or promises. This exposed the boxes to covetous hands. I don't know what happened to them in the intervening years. Rawl has at least one, but not all three. Not yet, anyway.
Zed's eyes flashed with fervor.
Do you see, Richard? We don't have to go up against Dark and Rawl. We have only to find at least one of the boxes before he does.
And keep it from him, which may prove considerably harder than finding it, Richard pointed out, letting the words hang in the air a moment. He had a sudden thought. Zed, do you think one of the boxes could be here in Westland?
Not likely.
Why not? Zed hesitated.
Richard, I never told you I was a wizard, but you never asked before, so I didn't really lie about it. I did tell you one lie, though. I told you I came here before the boundary went up. In reality, I didn't come here before it went up, because I couldn't. You see, in order to create a Westland free of magic, there could be none here when the boundary went up. Magic could come here after the boundary was established, but not be here before. Since I have magic, my presence would have prevented it from happening, so I had to stay in the Midlands until after, and only then was I able to come through.
Everyone has their little secrets. I don't begrudge you yours. But what's your point?
My point is, we know none of the boxes could have been here before the boundary went up, or their magic would have prevented it. So if they were all in the Midlands before the boundary, because of the magic, and I didn't bring one with me, they have to still be in the Midlands.
Richard thought about this a while, feeling his spark of hope die. He turned his thoughts back to the matter at hand. You still have not told me what a seeker is, or my part in this. Zed folded his hands together.
A seeker is a person who answers to no one but himself. He is a law unto himself.
The sword of truth is his to wield as he wishes, and within the limits of his own strength, he can hold anyone to answer for anything.
Zed held up his hand to forestall Richard's objections and questions.
I realize this is vague. The problem with explaining it is that it is like all power. As I told you before, it's how the person uses power that makes it what it is. This is the core of why it is so important to find the right person. A person who will use the power wisely. You see, Richard, a seeker does exactly as the name implies. He seeks. He seeks the answers to things. Things of his own choosing. If he is the right person, he will seek the answers that will help others, not just himself. The whole purpose of a seeker is to be free to quest on his own, to go where he wants, ask what he wants, learn what he wants, find answers to what he wants to know, and, if need be, do whatever it is the answers demand.
Richard straightened, his voice rising.
Are you telling me a seeker is an assassin? I won't lie to you, Richard. There have been times when it has turned out that way.
Richard's face was crimson.
I will not be an assassin.
Zed shrugged.
As I said, a seeker is whatever he wants. Ideally, a seeker is the standard bearer of justice. I can't tell you much more because I've never been one. I don't know what goes on in their heads. However, I know the proper kind of person.
Zed pushed his sleeves up again while he watched Richard.
But I don't pick a seeker, Richard. A true seeker picks himself. I only name them. You have been a seeker for years without knowing it. I have watched you, and that is what you do. You are always seeking the truth. What do you think you were doing in the high ven? You were seeking the answer to the vine, to your father's murder. You could have left that to others, others more qualified. And as it turned out, perhaps you should have. But that would have been against your nature, the nature of a seeker. They don't leave it to others because they want to know for themselves. When Kaylin told you she was looking for a wizard who was lost since before she was born, you had to know who it was. And you found him.
But that's only because, Zed cut him off.
It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Only one thing matters. That you did it. I saved you with the root I found. Does it matter that it was easy for me to find the root? No. Would you be any more alive if it had been extremely difficult for me to find the root? No. I found the root. You are well. That is all that matters. Same with the seeker. It's of no importance how he finds an answer, only that he does. As I said, there are no rules. Right now, there are answers you must find. I don't know how you will do so, and I don't care, only that you do. If you say, oh, that's simple, all the better, as we don't have much time.
Richard's guard went up. What answers? Zed smiled, and his eyes sparkled.
I have a plan. But you must first find a way to get us across the boundary. What?
Richard ran his fingers through his hair in exasperation, muttering his disbelief under his breath. He looked back to Zed.
You're a wizard. You had something to do with putting the boundary there in the first place. You have just said you have been through it to retrieve the sword. Kaylin has come through the boundary sent by wizards. I know nothing of the boundary. If you expect me to find you the answer, well, here it is. Zed, you are a wizard. Send us through the boundary.
Zed shook his head.
No. I said, across the boundary, not through it. I know how to go through it, but we can't do that. Rawl waits for us to do so. If we try to go through, he will kill us, if we are lucky. We must instead go across it without going through it. There is a big difference.
Zed, I'm sorry, but it's impossible. I don't know anything about how to get us across. I don't see how it can be done. The boundary is the underworld. If we can't go through it, then we are stuck here. The whole purpose of the boundary is to prevent anyone from doing just what you are asking me to do.
Richard felt helpless. They were depending on him, and he didn't have any answers. Zed's voice was kind and gentle.
Richard, You are too quick to criticize yourself. What is it you say when I ask how you must solve difficult problems?
Richard knew what Zed was talking about, but was reluctant to answer, as he felt answering only pulled him in deeper. Zed lifted an eyebrow, waiting. Richard looked down at the table, picking at the wood with his thumbnail. Think of the solution, not the problem.
And right now, you are doing it backwards. You are only concentrating on why the problem is impossible. You are not thinking of the solution.
Reluctant to answer, as he felt answering only pulled him in deeper. Zed lifted an eyebrow, waiting. Richard looked down at the table, picking at the wood with his thumbnail. Think of the solution, not the problem.
And right now, you are doing it backwards. You are only concentrating on why the problem is impossible. You are not thinking of the solution.